Hello, everyone! As a heads up, this episode has been divided into two parts. You are now listening to part two. If you haven't listened to part one yet, please go back and do so before continuing forward. We hope you enjoy.
So we see this standoff between Gollum and Bilbo, where Gollum wants to eat him. If you don't know who Gollum is, I guess we should be better at describing some of this. Gollum is this creature. At this point, what we know in The Hobbit is he's this creature that's lived in the mountains for a long time. He's very isolated from society, and he's learned to talk to himself. He kind of has this multiple personality thing going on because he's only been around himself for a very long time, and anything else he comes in contact with, he eats. So there you are. That's who Bilbo comes face to face with. Right before this, actually, in the tunnel, Bilbo does find a ring, which of course becomes very important. So he sticks that in his pocket, goes, and that's where he runs into Gollum. And Gollum, of course, is thinking about eating Bilbo, but he had just eaten a goblin, and so he's pretty full at this point. So he's a little more, his curiosity is able to come out. He's not, like, quite so focused on the natural man in him right now. The natural Gollum in him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
What did we...
Madagascar.
Madagascar. Yeah. Go watch our Madagascar episode.
Yes. Anyway.
Yeah, he's never seen a hobbit before, too. So I think that kind of works in Bilbo's favor as well. He's just eating this goblin and he's like, what the heck is this thing? And so he, like, is super curious and then not hungry. So,
Yeah. He's never seen a hobbit before, as far as he can remember.
As far as he
just
can
a little
remember.
Hint. Yes. little hint for later.
I know. I think the narrator kind of lies to us in the book. He's like, I don't know anything about his history, and then, like, keeps hinting at all. Yes. He's like,
the unreliable
and
narrator.
And I'm like, whatever. You know exactly where he came from.
Yeah.
You don't have to if you don't know Gollum's backstory. It doesn't matter.
You'll learn later. If you continue with us, even.
Yes.
So, for now, he doesn't know what a hobbit is, and so he's trying to understand, calls him Bagginses. And, yeah,
hobbitses.
It's a really hobbitses. Anyway, so at one point, it's brought up, the idea of games is brought up, and Gollum's like, oh, I love games, like, by which he means riddles. So he starts to challenge Bilbo to a game of riddles, and the deal becomes if Gollum wins, then he gets to eat Bilbo, and if Bilbo wins, then Gollum will show him the way out of the mountains. And so the deal is struck. It's 3-3. I don't know that I have much to say about the actual game of riddles in and of itself beyond that it's iconic.
Awesome.
So yes,
awesome.
It's a great scene.
I feel like an idiot.
We see, right? I'm like, the narrator's so rude.
Over
he's
and
like,
over.
You probably already knew.
Obviously, this is the answer.
Yes. You're like, shut up, Tolkien.
One of the answers I didn't even get after they explained it.
So
I was
like,
huh?
I still don't understand.
So,
And he's like, oh yeah, and he's like, but you need to be understanding because you're not in the same situation Bilbo is in. He's pretty stressed.
I'm like, I'm sitting on my living room couch reading a book and I have no idea what the answer is.
I don't understand. Anyway, so they have this game of riddles. It ends with Gollum saying, ask me a question. And Bilbo asks, what is in my pocket? Meaning the ring that we later learn was Gollum's and he lost it. Gollum, after three guesses, doesn't get it right. And so the deal is he's supposed to show him out of the mountain, of course. But then he realizes that his treasure, his precious, the ring, is gone and immediately believes that Bilbo stole it, which is true. The author is like, well, he probably would have thought that anyway because he loves this ring so much. He would have automatically thought. He's very suspicious. But the truth is Bilbo does have it. So Bilbo's a little nervous and ends up running away from Gollum, and it's this chase. And Bilbo ends up putting on the ring and turning invisible. So he discovers this is a magic ring that's able to make him invisible to the eye. And he ends up pulling out his sword and raising it to try to kill Gollum. And in this moment in the book, Bilbo looks at Gollum and, like I said, he's thinking about killing him. But then it says Gollum had not actually threatened to kill him or tried to yet, and he was miserable, alone, lost. A sudden understanding, a pity mixed with horror, welled up in Bilbo's heart. A glimpse of endless, unmarked days without light or hope of betterment, hard stone, cold fish, sneaking and whispering. All these thoughts passed in a flash of a second. And at that point, he decides not to kill Gollum. And I love that it brings in, again, this humanity that's in Bilbo of realizing, like, this is a living being who has suffered. Like, Bilbo doesn't understand the extent of what has been going on. He doesn't understand the impact of the ring yet. He doesn't understand a lot of, obviously, Gollum's backstory. And so he's just seeing what he sees, and he recognizes that this is a being that has suffered a lot and doesn't deserve this sort of treatment from him. And I really love just that show of how humane he is and how, again, how his heart is always in the right place. And I love connecting it with back to home. He recognizes that this is a being whose only home has been this dark, dank, gross place where he just has to struggle to survive all the time, that he doesn't understand the comforts of home and what is out there. And that in turn has limited his ability to grow and become a better person. And I do love too that it mentions something about without light or hope of betterment. Like, I think that connects back to with his idea of home. It's also a place where he feels like he can improve and can look towards a hope in the future of becoming better and better and better with each passing day. And that's part of the charm of it for him, is it's a place where he can feel sheltered but also be allowed to grow still. And that's what ultimately keeps him from taking Gollum's life, is those values again coming back into play.
So I don't have anything, not necessarily specifically to our Gollum story here, mm-hmm. but I do want to bring in the fact that I love that Bilbo, on multiple occasions throughout the story, this being the first, like, really big one, that he is left alone. We have, in the book, he gets struck on the head mm-hmm. and knocked out and left behind by everybody. And that's what kind of leads him to having to figure out his own way out of the goblin tunnel. And we find out later that everybody else has gotten out and they're all like, is he dead? Do we go back for him? Is it worth it? You know? And at the same time, he's gotten out and he's like, should I go back for them? Are they dead? What's going on? But anyway, we do see a lot of growth in these circumstances where he's left on his own, right? And it's a different and maybe even more like fast-paced growth than we see in other circumstances, because there are some times where he's with everybody but it's up to him to like save them all, right? But that's a different feeling from waking up in the dark and realizing that you've been abandoned mm-hmm. and that there's no one there to help you and you can't see anything and you don't know where you're going. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's just hopeless, you know? And but he just keeps going in those situations, and it does so much for him. I was thinking about how, you know, he keeps working to rejoin the others on the path that they're all on. They're on this path, but we kind of get separated from each other. But, you know, if we all just keep staying on that same path and putting one foot forward, then we won't keep being alone. Like, we'll meet up with everybody else eventually. And I wanted to bring it back to that talk that I've been talking about from Uchtdorf. He's kind of talking about how, like, we can't get through life on autopilot. We have to be the ones who keep moving. And he describes first something that I thought was really impactful. We are, each one of us, strangers and pilgrims in this world. In many ways, we are far from home, but that doesn't mean we need to feel lost or alone. Our beloved Father in heaven has given us the light of Christ, which, you know, is touching when you're in a dark goblin yes. tunnel where you can't see anything, literally.
Yeah.
And deep within each one of us, a heavenly stirring urges us to turn our eyes and hearts to him as we make the pilgrimage back to our celestial home. This requires effort. You cannot go there without striving to learn of him, understanding his instructions, earnestly applying them, and putting one foot in front of the other. Continuing on later, he says, no one else is responsible for your personal journey. The Savior will help you and prepare the way before you, but the commitment to follow him and keep his commandments must come from you. That is your sole burden, your sole privilege. This is your great adventure. Please heed the call of your Savior. Follow him. I love that idea of personal journey, because Bilbo is on this really important journey helping everyone else, but it is a personal journey at the same time. He is still an individual doing something, putting himself out of his comfort zone that impacts him in a really, really powerful way. And lots of times he can rely on Gandalf, he can rely on the dwarves, but sometimes he has to just rely on the light of Christ that's within him and what he knows is right. And even going to right after he gets out of the tunnel, and now he has this magic ring, so he feels like he has more capability than he used to after he's accomplished this really amazing thing. And it describes how he's like debating within himself his duty to go back and try to save his friend. Right.
Yes.
And he said, it says that just when he had decided that he did have a duty to go back in and he was resignedly going to put the ring on and go back in, he hears their voices. And so he doesn't have to. But, you know, he's been on this journey and it was scary and it was difficult. But through it, he learned that he is capable and that he can do something and has more than he realized. And so he's willing to then go in and bless other people with what God has given him, which is what I talked about earlier with Uchtdorf's talk. And I love it. I love his journey that he's on in so many different ways.
I love that too. And it's at this point in the film where we have that line that you mentioned earlier, yes, where he says, I miss my books and my armchair. I miss my home. And that's why I came back, because you don't have one. And I love that. I'll get into it later on. It's in the movie, it makes a later scene in the final film of the Hobbit trilogy of films so much more emotional in the movie than it is in the book. It's kind of rushed past in the book. And so I'll get into that in a bit. But that, yeah, look at home. And I love that through this adventure, he doesn't become the type of person that stops caring about home. Like, he doesn't go home and think, oh, dang, I wish I could be out there again.
This is
like
boring.
A part of him, like, kind of does. And we see that a little more in Lord of the Rings, but it's less like hating home and wanting to leave. It's more like, I love home, but I've changed enough that home feels like somewhere else now a little bit. And so there's still that value of home. And like at the end of this book, again, we'll get to it a little more in depth later, but he does still have that desire to be at home. And when he goes home, he feels happy. He's changed, but he's embracing that change. Like, he's recognizing that he has changed and he has different people coming to his house all the time at that point, and a big shift in everything he's experiencing. And it's because of this adventure, but that value is still there. And I think often we forget that the best way to maintain a sense of happiness and joy in this life and peace is to remember where we're going towards, that we are looking to find home. And that can come in little moments here on earth, when we go to the temple, when we do things that invite the spirit. And then ultimately we will go to our eternal home. But along the way, things get rough and hard. But if we keep those values, then we're going to be able to make it and really experience all of the blessings that go along with maintaining those values. I feel like I'm waffling a bit, but if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So after this event, there are several more events. I think that it just becomes a part of the episodic nature of the adventure. So we meet like Bjorn, the skin changer, and he's very friendly welcoming them into his home, which Bilbo absolutely loves. That moment of peace again, we get that return to a home-centered focus. Then of course we go into Mirkwood and the elves taking the dwarves prisoner, and then the dwarves of course get away in the barrels, another very iconic Hobbit scene. This was like the one scene that I remembered after my dad read it to me as a child before the films came out. Like, I remembered the barrel scene. That was what I remembered. And Gollum, of course. I remembered the Game of Riddles and the barrel scene. So there you go. And the dragon. Those three. We'll go with those three, but yes, the barrel scene has always stuck in my mind. And then they end up getting to Lake Town, which is a town near the Lonely Mountain. So they're right on the doorstep now. They have a little bit of a issue with the humans there at first, but they end up, the master of the town is very greedy. So he's like, yes, go off and bring us more money. So that is what is going on there. And they end up at the Lonely Mountain. They find the hidden door that their little key unlocks. I should mention Gandalf left them before Mirkwood. So he's not there.
Yes. No more wizard. We should say
the wizard is gone for now. He comes back later. But for now, it is Bilbo's main opportunity. This is the moment he has been waiting for. Everything he has prepared for this journey comes down to this, going into the mountain and particularly finding, do they want to find the Arkenstone? I think at first he goes in to see if there's the dragon in there, right?
Yeah.
To see like what it looks like. I don't think he really
knows about the Arkenstone yet.
I think it's a little bit later that they bring up, oh, we really should get the Arkenstone because that's very symbolic of the power and it's a powerful gem, that kind of thing. So they're like, go ahead and get that and maybe we can figure out a way around the dragon in the meantime, kind of a thing. So then Bilbo goes back in and comes face to face directly with Smaug the Terrible. So I love Smaug. I think he's such a wonderfully written dragon, and I love the way they do it in the movie. He looks so good. He's like the best. When you picture a dragon, it is what they put on the screen, and I think it's amazing. He's terrifying. And Benedict Cumberbatch's super deep voice just makes it all the more engaging and exciting. For sure. So anyway, sorry, I totally skipped forward a little too far. Going back to the first time Bilbo's entering to see what possibly is going down in there. It says at one point, it was at this point that Bilbo stopped. Going on from there was the bravest thing he ever did. The tremendous things that happened afterwards were as nothing compared to it. He fought the real battle in the tunnel alone before he ever saw the vast danger that lay in wait.
That's so
and
good.
And I know, isn't that so good? I was like, are you kidding me? That's amazing. Just realizing, because I should say leading up to this, he starts to feel the heat and he recognizes it's probably fire, which means there's probably a dragon in there and he's terrified, but he does make the choice to keep going. And I love that symbolically of everything we do. I think the hardest battle we ever fight is in our own minds. It's that decision, do I keep going or do I stop right here before I have to face what's coming? It's that anticipatory anxiety, because once you're in the middle of something difficult, like, it's hard, but like you're processing through it at that point and you're just focused on getting through it, and so you don't have time to be worried about it quite as much. It's still there, but it's not the exact same. Like, when you're in talking to the dragon, you're not necessarily, you don't really have a choice. You know what I'm saying? You're
not thinking, should I be like, here or not?
Yes. You're should thinking, I turn around?
How do I respond to stress?
Yes. Just, you're thinking, how do I do this?
Yeah.
How do I There's go about
There's a dragon
this?
In front of yeah. me. I gotta take care of this.
So I just love that strength of a moment. And again, it goes back to that small things that keep the darkness at bay, that small decision to just keep going a little further and see if there is a dragon there is what makes all the difference, honestly, in this whole story, because the dwarves weren't about to go in there. They're suddenly very reliant on Bilbo, where they started off really not expecting to be in any way.
And there's kind of this ridiculous hole in their plan where they don't actually have an idea of how to get rid of the dragon.
Yes, like they don't actually know what to do, which Bilbo keeps bringing up, and they like are just kind of like, eh, we'll get to it when we get to it.
We'll
and
see.
He's like, okay, well, we're here, so what now?
Now there's a dragon.
Yes, exactly. And the dwarves obviously could have ended up going in there at some point anyway, but chances are high that they would have died because they're loud and not very nice and respectful. Like, Bilbo has the ability to be respectful. He's not as noticeable, like we've mentioned.
Pikes curiosity.
Exactly. Like, he's people don't see hobbits around. Like, they're only really in their own corner of the world. Like was mentioned at the very beginning, like, they purposely stay away from other beings. And so he's in a position where he's the one who can make a difference. And so his decision to keep going is what makes the difference. And I think that's important for us to remember as we go out into the world and experience our own adventures, that we don't necessarily have to keep going. God's not going to make us, But ultimately, the biggest changes and impacts will come when we make the choice to keep going, to do those actions that we feel inspired to do.
So I've shared a lot of quotes from my talk, but I just loved it so much. Hey, and I felt so like, I think Uchtdorf, you know, he has like the Your Great Adventure talk where he directly talks about The Hobbit. I think this talk was actually framed around The Hobbit and he just didn't tell anyone.
Love it. Perfect.
Anyway, so I'm gonna start with the quote and then I'll go into my into what Bilbo's doing. But Uchtdorf says, "The fires and tumults of mortal life may threaten and frighten, but those who incline their hearts to God will be encircled by his peace. Their joy will not be diminished. They will not be abandoned or forgotten." When writing to the saints in Corinth, the Apostle Paul observed that not many of them would be considered wise by worldly standards, but that didn't matter, because God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And that just felt so, like, spot on for Bilbo's conversation with Smaug. Like, if we talk about weak things versus mighty, are you kidding me? Like, we're this little, got like a 3-foot guy here.
Yeah.
And then this giant dragon that has destroyed villages and like killed thousands of people. And Bilbo walks in and he fights that battle in the tunnel that you were talking about. And once he does, Bilbo isn't, I mean, he's not wise according to the world. He hasn't seen the world. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know about dragons. We even have moments where the narrator says, maybe if he had known more about dragons, he wouldn't have done this.
Yes.
But he just, you know, he's doing what he can and he just starts talking to this dragon and just being himself. Like you're saying, he like is just, he's respectful to him, but then also kind of plays with him and gets like sarcastic and silly, but then is like using the cleverness that he has and flatters him. And I just love the idea of weak things confounding the wise. Like Smaug is just, he really does just take what he has and just totally throws Smaug off. Like this dragon doesn't even know what's happening anymore. And he's trying to find, like, you know, Bilbo has this feeling that they need to shut the door. That's their only way out of the tunnel. And everybody's like, you're crazy. But he just has the feeling. And he's like, no, we need to do it now. And then Smaug happened to be right there looking for them and would have gotten them. But Bilbo listened and confounded him once again, right? The fire of Smaug frightens Bilbo, like Uchtdorf says, but he is still able to, honestly, you almost get the feeling that he's like, he's enjoying this conversation.
Yeah.
Like he's enjoying himself kind of outsmarting this really, really powerful being.
Yeah.
He has this peace and he has this joy and he's like, you know, this is stressful and he doesn't do everything perfectly and he's not totally happy with how everything goes down. But in the moment he's like, yeah, I'm here, you know, I'm saying what I need to. And it's almost like the spirit putting the words into his mouth in the moment, right? As he just kind of trusts and walks forward and does what he needs to do. And, you know, back in that quote, it says, they will not be abandoned or forgotten. And he's not. Like, God is with him the whole time, helping him know what to say, know what to do, and somehow ultimately, like, mind defeat this incredible being and ends up finding out the secret to defeating him, which unwittingly he doesn't know, but God is again using him and his abilities to send that secret to defeating the dragon to the people who can actually do that part of it. And I just love that, the way that it just ties in so beautifully.
So then after this interaction with Smaug, Smaug ends up going around trying to look for the dwarves and for Bilbo, and then ends up getting out and going to attack Lake Town, knowing that they had received help from the men of Lake Town. And the narrator just ends up being like, meanwhile, after this, Smaug leaves and the dwarves are just back there and they just kind of like have this conversation about some things, and they end up going in and falling in love with the golds. They're just very focused on it. They're just astounded by it. And of course, Bilbo is also amazed by the amount of gold and jewels and jewelry and all of these things. He's like, wow, this is really cool. But it says, all the same, Mr. Baggins kept his head more clear of the bewitchment of the hoard than the dwarves did. Long before the dwarves were tired of examining the treasures, he became wary of it and sat down on the floor, and he began to wonder nervously what the end of it would be. I would give a good many of these precious goblets, he thought, for a drink of something cheering out of one of Bjorn's wooden bowls. So his mind's flashing back to a home-like atmosphere that he just wishes he could be in. He doesn't care the fact that there's so much gold and riches around him, more than anywhere else on Earth, probably. In fact, slightly tangentially, there was an article I remember a long time ago my dad read that talked about the top richest fictional characters. And Smaug, with his collection in the Lonely Mountain, was number two. Oh. The number one was
please tell me
what Scrooge McDuck and his dream. They like did some sort of mathematical equation of like the dimensions of the room and what would hold. And so apparently Scrooge McDuck apparently is the richest fictional character, but Smaug is close second.
That's hilarious.
So you're just imagining of all the fictional stories that are very popular and stuff, this is like a lot of riches in this mountain. And Bilbo's just like, man, I wish I could just have some soup in a wooden bowl. That's what he wants. And he's just like tired. Like his journey to him is at an end. And he's like, I just want to go home. He's like, okay, this is cool. Like he appreciates it. It's not like he's like, ugh, the whole time I've just wanted to go home. Like he's become more of a person who's able to live in the moment. He's learned a lot. He appreciates what he's learned, but he still just wants to go home.
Right. Yeah, I just, he's like, these riches are really cool and stuff, but, like, ultimately it's, like, what is the point? Like, his values right. are just so mm-hmm. solidly placed where it's, like, they could buy me more ham and eggs, I guess, but, like, I have all the ham and eggs I need.
Yes,
so,
he's like, I'm taken care of, so
I
what's
have
the point?
All of the things that make me comfortable and that make me happy, so, like, what would I do with this? It would sit in a chest at home and doing nothing, so why?
Exactly. For this conversation, I studied the Overcome the World and Find Rest talk by President Russell M. Nelson from a couple of conferences ago. And he talks, obviously, a lot about overcoming the world. He says, what does it mean to overcome the world? It means overcoming the temptation to care more about the things of this world than the things of God. Overcoming the world does mean that your resistance to sin will increase, your heart will soften as your faith in Jesus Christ increases. Overcoming the world means growing to love God and his beloved Son more than you love anyone or anything else. And obviously, this isn't directly talking about Jesus or Heavenly Father or any of the purpose of life, but it is talking about a sense of peace and connection that Bilbo's missing. Like, if his home was just a place, it wouldn't have the same meaning for him. It's the fact that it contains emotions that are positive, that are peaceful, where he has friends and family nearby. Like, all of the hobbits are related. Like, there's just a few lines of hobbits, and they're all related and just really closely connected to each other, and there's this sense of community and care that's there. Everybody's respectful of each other. And that's what he is missing. And that's what our eternal home represents, is represented by. It's those feelings of connection and love and goodness and peace that only divinity can bring us. And we see in this moment that Bilbo overcomes the world by having those values, by focusing on that over power and other things, wealth that seems to make other people feel so happy in a given moment, seems to make the dwarves so enchanted, and yet they quickly realize as well that it's just not what's most important. They get lost a little bit in the process, but they do figure that out as we go along. So continuing forward, we have the death of Smaug. So he goes to Lake Town, and Bard, the bargeman, ends up through a lot of circumstances that he's in, ends up being able to slay Smaug. And it's obviously a really exciting thing, but Smaug still was able to desolate a lot of Lake Town. And so they're looking for ways to heal after this terrible tragedy and all of their losses and make sure that they can also still survive. And the elves come as well, hearing that the dragon is slain, and basically the men and the elves team up to try to get at the riches in the mountain. The elves, for maybe a little bit more greedy reasons, the men mostly led by Bard, primarily to rebuild their lives after this destruction. Especially, it's a destruction that was caused pretty much by the dwarves. Obviously, it was the dragon that did it ultimately, but the dwarves kind of, you know, were probably not where they should have been necessarily. And so they all go to the mountain, and the dwarves are very much under this dragon sickness, is what they call it. Just this spell that is cast with gold, that greed and stuff that rises up in them. Thorin in particular is very hit by this. And Bilbo, like we just mentioned, is noticing this problem. And so he does find the Arkenstone, which is this, like we said, this big, powerful stone. It's very symbolic. It's powerful. I don't think we ever learn necessarily why. It's just like supposed to be a great, powerful, symbolic stone.
Yeah, I don't know if they ever describe it as powerful as much as it's just like huge. More symbolic and huge. Yes. And worth a okay. lot. And so Thorin just like cares about it a lot because it was like okay. I think it's the one that his grandfather found and used it in the movie. Okay, I just remembered. I don't know if they say this in the book. In the movie, they describe it as like his proof that his rule was divinely appointed.
Okay. Yes, that's right. And it's like so, the heart of the mountain.
What they call it.
Sorry, the angle change and that there was a little bit of a cut. My phone where I'm recording this, the video part of it, almost died. So I had to get a readjustment for the rest of this discussion. But anyway, yes, you were saying that it doesn't really give us much information in the book about the Arkenstone
beyond I really don't think so. And it ends up buried with Thorin, which implies to me that it doesn't contain, it's not like actually powerful innately. Yeah.
It just matters symbolically to them. Represents the throne.
Yeah.
That power. Okay, fair enough. So Bilbo takes the Arkenstone as his 14th share because he's really worried about his friends. He's like, they're being consumed, they're making terrible decisions. So he goes down and gives it to the elf king and Bard, the leader of the humans, and tells them, you can use this to barter with Thorin, it will be really important to him, all that jazz. And at this point, Gandalf's back. He just decided to show up again. So anyway, they do end up bartering the stone, and Bilbo ends up going back into the mountain to be with his friends because he recognizes that's where he's most needed. And he does tell them, yes, that's the real Arkenstone. I gave it to them. And they are threatening to throw him off the mountain. Like, they've completely lost their minds.
So much for friends.
Yes, seriously. And I kind of do, like, in some ways in the film where it's mostly just Thorin that's the problem. Just because then you see how much the others care about Bilbo in it. Like, when Thorin's like, throw him off the mountain, the other dwarves are like, what? Like, they still are very loyal to him, but they're like, no. And then they, like, have Bilbo run. They're like, get out of here, go. Anyway, so we have this big interaction, and then we have several other armies come, and it becomes the Battle of the Five Armies. So that is going on. It kind of is rushed through. It's kind of weird.
It is.
The way it is in the book.
I'm not gonna lie. I kind of check out after... I found that I checked out after Smaug was dead.
That's
I was
kind
of like, okay, why am I reading the rest? Like, why is this story here?
And the rest of it just feels so random.
It's just,
in a way. Like,
it just
we've been building up to the dragon this whole time, and then all of a sudden we have a big battle.
And then there's a giant battle.
And you're like, okay.
We already, like, fought the goblins and stuff, right? But sure.
Like, it's very interesting, but I also feel like it's kind of symbolic of the internal struggle that's associated, because the whole time we're like, yeah, get to the mountain, but it's like, take a step back and realize why they want to get to the mountain, and maybe that's not the best reason, and, like, people need to still learn things. Like, just because the dragon's gone doesn't mean that our characters understand what's important yet.
Right. And so, obviously, now we have Thorin totally obsessed with gold.
Exactly. Yeah. We've gone down a bad path. So, anyway, in the book, so the battle happens. suffice it to say, the eagles come in and save the day. Bilbo ends up getting knocked out while invisible, so, like, no one can find him. And it's so funny when he, like, wakes up and someone's, like, calling him, and he's like, oh, I'm all by myself, and someone's calling him, and he sees this man there, just, like, a random guy who is looking for him, and he's like, oh, yeah, like, I'm fine, I just got a bump on the head and stuff. And they were like, yeah, we were like, what? They thought you were dead, like... I don't know. We've been looking all over for you. It's a good thing I came out and checked one more time.
Yeah, he's like, this was the last search.
Yeah, we're done. Exactly. It's so, like, nonchalant. He's just like, yeah, we were about to give up on you. I'm glad you're here, though. Like, it's just, okay. Anyway, so he goes back. It's at this point that we learn that Thorin is on his deathbed. He is about to die. And his nephews, Keeley and Feely, who are, like, the next in the line of Durin for the throne, are also already dead. So it's kind of, like, also this end of a royal line, which is obviously very sad in that way as well, that symbolism.
Dude, they dropped that on me, and I was not ready for it. You're
like, oh.
I was like, okay. They're like, yeah, Keeley and Feely are dead. And I was like, wait. They were my favorites.
Get to see it. Another good change in the movie. We actually, like, get to sit in that grief and, like, experience him more.
Yeah, it definitely
than it is in the book.
Yeah, it was painful in the book, just kind of, like, hearing about it after, and then just moving on. I was like, okay, if you're gonna give me, like, the story, then give me the story.
Yeah, why are we doing this? We get to explore the grief a lot better in the films, which I do like. I like a good exploration of grief, even if it's just a little. Anyway, but while Thorin's on his deathbed, he's been asking to see Bilbo. He wants to see Bilbo. And Bilbo basically thanks him for taking him on this adventure and is very glad that they've shared perils together and had this adventure. He sees him as a friend, basically. And Thorin says, "There is more in you of good than you know, child of the kindly West. Some courage and some wisdom blended in measure. If more of us valued food and cheer and song above hoarded gold, it would be a merrier world." And I love that. I do like how they change it in the movie. And this is where it's coming back, the thing that I mentioned earlier, where Thorin says, go back to your books and your armchair. And he says, if more people valued home, this world would be a merrier place. And so it's building on the idea of home, not just, you know, food and merriment, but specifically home, the sense of home. That Bilbo so desires, and I love that change in the movie as well. And I love to, like, especially because all throughout this, Thorin's had a lot of moments where he's not treated Bilbo very well and been very dismissive of him and then angry with him. And we see that thing that Bilbo said in the first film when he said, "I miss my books and my armchair," stuck with Thorin. Like, he heard that and was like, oh, I don't have that, and I want that. And I just love that, because that's what we do when we teach about the gospel. Gosh, have I ever gotten emotional in one of these discussions before? Maybe one other, but I don't think so. Anyway, just, like, what we're teaching people is reminding them of what home is, really. It's that peace and joy that comes from knowing our Savior and knowing the purpose of life and what his plan for us truly is. And it's centered around a true understanding of home. And I just love that. The last thing Thorin's thinking about before dying is a recognition of home and the beauty that that is, and the gratitude he has for knowing Bilbo, who was able to teach him that. Anyway.
I love it. Just to continue and tie up that thought, I'll share my last quote from this Ukta. I feel like I've quoted this whole entire
But love it.
Oh, good. He says, "The Lord has established the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to help you in this commitment to serve God and fellow men. Its purpose is to encourage, teach, lift, and inspire. This wonderful church provides opportunities for you to exercise compassion, reach out to others, and renew and keep sacred covenants. It is designed to bless your life and improve your home, community, and nation. Come join with us and trust the Lord. Lend your talents to his wonderful work. Reach out, encourage, heal, and support all who desire to feel and heed the yearning for our supernal home. Let us join together in this glorious pilgrimage to heavenly climes. The gospel is a transcendent message of hope, happiness, and joy. It is the pathway that leads us home.
That's perfect. I don't even feel like we need to wrap up anything else in this book. Basically, Bilbo goes home.
Bilbo goes home.
And he's a changed man, a changed hobbit.
He's a changed hobbit.
But he is also happy to be home, and it's lovely. And then we get to see more of him in the Fellowship of the Ring, so we will come back. Yes. I don't know when yet. We need to schedule the next few. We hit our end of what we had scheduled thus far, so we got to figure that out. But we will get into that as soon as possible. Thank you so much for watching, for listening. If you are willing to, please subscribe, as well as leave a like and a 5-star review, depending on where you're watching or listening. Follow us on Instagram at God and All Things. We've been doing better and better at doing things on there, so you can check that out. It will also have like hints for upcoming episodes and just things that we're doing together, our personal like spiritual thoughts for Come Follow Me and other things as we're going along. So definitely check that out. Also, if you're interested in seeing what I'm reading just casually, you can see my channel, Good Strong Words, on YouTube. I discuss all sorts of things, bookish things over there. And I think that that will do it. So thank you again for watching and listening. We hope you are having a wonderful week. Keep remembering to see God in all things, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.